This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents In the Darkness by Mike Omer, performed by Brittany Presley. Chapter 1. San Angelo, Texas. Friday, September 2nd, 2016. A measure of sand trickled into the grave as he hoisted himself out. The tiny grains hissed, sprinkling onto the lid of the box, dirtying it. For a moment, he was irritated. He wanted it to be clean as he observed it from above. He smiled to himself as he realized the absurdity. He was about to bury the box under a few tons of soil. What did it matter if a bit of sand littered it? He took a moment to think of the other participant in this experiment. She might have heard the sand scattering above her. It was possible she even understood the implication. His heart pounded excitedly as he imagined it. The sound amplified in the small space, accompanied by the absolute darkness within. He picked up the shovel, jamming it into the mound of dirt, and then paused. Stupid. So stupid. He'd been so excited by the actual act that he'd forgotten the important part. He laid the shovel aside and turned to his laptop. He hooked it to the external battery charger, making sure the charger worked. Didn't want the battery to run out halfway through the experiment. The loud sound of a truck's engine behind him made him tense up and he gritted his teeth. He had chosen this spot with a lot of care, making sure that it was hidden from view by a wall of cacti, trees, and shrubs. The road was hardly used, but the occasional vehicle still drove by. The distractions grated on him. This was a great occasion. It deserved his entire focus. He activated the video feed and scrutinized the screen. The angle seemed a bit too high. He went over to the camera, adjusted the tripod's height, and then checked it again. Perfect. He hesitated for a second, the pivotal moment nearly robbing him of his breath. Then he clicked, starting the broadcast. He picked the shovel up again and dumped the first batch of sand and gravel onto the box. The camera lens watched him, and he forced himself to ignore it. "Smile for the camera," he could hear his mother's voice say. She never gave up on trying to pose him for the family photo album when he was a young boy. When he hefted the fourth batch, the muffled thumping began. The truck's growling had probably woken the young woman, and now she was banging on the lid, trying to push it open, screaming. The craving took hold of him, and he nearly dropped the shovel as a sudden wave of heat flashed through his body. Focus. There would be plenty of time for that later. After 5 minutes, the lid was gone from view, though he could still hear the thumping and screaming if he tried hard. Was anyone watching the feed already? Probably. That was the whole point, after all. What were they thinking? Did they stare, waiting for the punchline? Assume this was a practical joke? Or were they even now calling the police, trying to explain what they had seen? His mind and body were consumed by raw excitement, the moment cathartic. He couldn't concentrate, couldn't remember the details of the plan. He had to stop, just for a moment. Had to let off some steam. He thrust the shovel into the ground and hurried to his van, taking the laptop with him. Once he was done, he cleaned up, put the gloves back on and got out of the van to resume digging. He hoped his viewers hadn't missed him too much. He'd heard somewhere that the average attention span of an online video clip viewer was 37 seconds. He competed with videos of drunk cats, movie trailers, and porn. He had to be fast. That was why he'd prepared the bins. He went over to the rightmost large bin and tipped it into the grave, watching with fascination as the soil poured inside in clumps. He emptied the bin completely, using the shovel to scrape the caked earth in the bottom. Then he went to each bin in turn and repeated the action, captivated by the view of the hole filling up, disappearing. Once he was done, he shoveled a bit more dirt over the grave to cover it completely. The shouts and thumps were gone now, silenced by the blanket of earth. Nevertheless, The audience at home could still hear it easily. He had made sure of that. He took a moment to appreciate his handiwork. The ground was almost uniform. They wouldn't find this location in a hurry. He stretched, giving his aching back a rest, and glanced at the lens. Smile for the camera. And though he knew it couldn't catch his face, he did. Chapter 2. Quantico, Virginia. Monday, September 5th, 2016. Zoe Bentley sat in her office, holding a photo between her thumb and forefinger. A man and a young woman smiling at the camera, their heads leaning close to each other, nearly touching. A casual observer wouldn't pay the photo any attention, just another selfie. But Zoe could see the tiny details that indicated otherwise. The man's empty eyes, the thin, hostile smile, and the girl's face. Innocent, naive, ignorant. The girl was Zoe's sister, Andrea. The man was Rod Glover, who had raped and strangled several women to death. It had been 1 month since Rod Glover had made his appearance in Dale City, showing up for a single creepy photo op and fading away like a malicious phantom. Zoe put the photo inside her desk drawer and slammed it shut. She knew she would retrieve it again later. She couldn't help herself. She'd done it several times every day since she'd gotten the photograph back from the tech lab. When she was a young girl, Glover had been her neighbor. Zoe had found out about his crimes and alerted the cops. Unfortunately, by the time they paid any attention to her, Glover had fled. Since then, he'd maintained a connection with Zoe, sending her envelopes containing gray ties, the item he'd used to strangle his victims. His obsession with Zoe had escalated last summer. While she'd been investigating a serial killer in Chicago, Glover had begun following her and later attacked and nearly killed her. Not long after, he'd sent Zoe the picture. He'd approached Andrea in the street, and she had agreed to pose for it, not knowing who he was. Since then, he'd disappeared completely. Zoe got up and paced her small office in the FBI's Behavioral Analysis Unit. Back and forth, brain buzzing. She had a hard time concentrating, partly because she was sleeping badly, nightmares and anxieties swirling in her skull. She sat down at her desk and logged into VICAP, the Violent Criminal Apprehension Program. It was the Bureau's database responsible for documenting violent crimes to aid the search for serial offenders. She searched for any crime that involved rape and strangulation in the past 24 hours. She got one hit, and her pulse quickened as she read the report. A 45-year-old woman had been raped and strangled to death in her own home in New York City. Nothing fit the profile, not even remotely. The victim was too old, the strangulation was done with bare hands, and the location was off. It wasn't him. Where are you, Glover? If she could, she'd place Andrea in protective custody, preferably in a secure locked compound until Glover was caught. But she couldn't. It had taken Zoe several weeks and numerous loud arguments to get her sister to move in with her temporarily. The FBI agent in charge of the case didn't see eye to eye with Zoe on the matter. Neither did the police. They believed Glover was long gone, that he'd never risk staying in close proximity to either of the Bentley sisters. Zoe knew they were wrong. She'd seen the way he'd looked at her the last time they'd met, heard his voice. This obsession wasn't going away. She gazed at nothing, lost in trepidation. Her desk lacked any pictures or accessories. She had tried to bring in a potted plant 2 times, but the first had died within 2 days. The second, a cactus, had managed to survive nearly a month before succumbing. She was pretty sure the problem was the lack of water and sunlight, though Tatum, her co-worker and friend, theorized she'd scared the plants to death with her stare. Now, instead of plants, she personalized her desk with mess, and there was plenty of it. The sound of familiar brisk footsteps tapped outside her door, and Zoe lunged from her seat and hurried to the corridor, catching up to the unit chief, Christine Mancuso. Chief, can I have a word? Mancuso barely glanced at her strides fast and purposeful.
Make it quick, Zoe, this week barely started, and I already have 6 different places I need to be.
Her dark hair was pulled back, her suit crisp and clean. Everything, down to the beauty spot by her lips, spoke of authority and efficiency.
I want to start working with Agent Caldwell on the Glover case.
Like Zoe, Dan Caldwell worked in the BAU profiling serial criminals. Zoe had been furious when he was assigned to the case instead of her, but Mancuso had refused to reconsider.
We've discussed this, no.
I think my first-hand knowledge can be a valuable asset in building this offender's profile. We should work with everything we have, especially since there are indications that it's only a matter of time before he strikes again.
Mancuso paused by a large printer that spewed pages and glanced at the topmost page, then grunted in frustration. She turned to look at Zoe.
Which is why Agent Caldwell has spent 2 days interviewing you, working over everything you know and remember from your acquaintance with Glover.
I believe I can be objective in my...
You can't.
Mancuso's tone was final.
Then I need a vacation.
So you can go after the man like some sort of bounty hunter. I don't think so. I need you here.
Why?
Zoe's voice came out almost shouting.
I'm working on cases that are 10 or 15 years old. Why is that so urgent?
Mancuso pursed her lips.
You're forgetting yourself, Bentley.
She turned back to the printer and thumbed through the printout, grabbed a few pages and began marching back, not bothering to check whether Zoe was following. Zoe hurried after her, almost running to keep pace.
Christine, I can't concentrate with that man threatening my sister. I can't do my job. Please give me a few days, that's all I need. A few days and an analyst.
Zoe had used the one weapon she'd held ever since she'd started working at Quantico. She'd never called Mancuso by her first name, never alluded to their past familiarity, working together in the field office in Boston. This was not something she'd be able to use again anytime soon.
Tell you what, Mancuso said.
There's another case I need you to look into. Once you're done with it, I'll give you 5 days. As long as you work directly with Agent Caldwell.
Okay.
Zoe nodded quickly, not believing her luck.
What's the case?
Mancuso paused by one of the office doors.
I'll forward it to you. There's no case file yet. It only arrived this morning.
No police file? Zoe asked, surprised. Then what do we have?
A link to a video of someone burying a woman alive.
I don't understand. If this is a serial killer, we should have other cases of...
It's the first one.
Zoe blinked.
But we deal in serial killers?
I believe there are going to be more.
Why?
Mancuso gripped the doorknob.
Because the title of the video is Experiment Number 1.
Chapter 3. Christine Mancuso opened the door of Tatum Gray's office and slid inside, shutting it forcefully behind her before Zoe had time to follow her. Though Christine cherished Zoe, the woman was slowly driving her insane. For the past month, Christine had borne an endless assault of emails, phone calls, and visits from Zoe, all concerning the same damn serial killer. She needed a few Bentley-free days. Tatum raised his head, surprised to see her in his office.
Good morning, Chief. How was the weekend?
Short. Christine sat down in front of him. He had an open case file on his desk and had been reading it when she'd interrupted him. Gray had joined the BAU recently, and still lacked most of the knowledge and experience that Christine expected from her profilers. But she had to grudgingly admit to herself that he compensated, at least partly, with sharp instincts. Even better, he possessed an almost unheard-of ability to actually listen to what other people had to say. Tatum had already proven himself a month before, working on the Chicago murders case with Zoe. Though Christine had some reservations about the way the investigation had been conducted, there was no ignoring the fact that they'd prevented the massacre of an entire family. She was glad to see that his usual grin was missing. Though she was sure that some people found his grin charming, she personally thought it made him look smug and adolescent. Right now, his expression was focused on her with interest.
What can you tell me about Glenn Wells? She asked.
Tatum blinked in confusion and leaned back, his wide shoulders tense. After a moment, he said,
Wells was a pedophile I investigated in L.A. He targeted young girls on their way to school. He'd grab them, rape them, and threaten them to keep silent about it. He also took pictures. We found photos of over 30 girls in his laptop. One of the girls tried to kill herself.
She watched her agent as he spoke. He radiated a calm demeanor, but his lip curved and his right fist clenched.
It was hard to get solid proof. It was all circumstantial. We had him followed for a long time and finally had him when he grabbed a 13-year-old girl in the street. He was dragging her away and we closed in to arrest him.
What happened?
He bolted. I chased Wells into the alley. He stopped halfway inside, turned around. I aimed the gun at him, told him to put his hands over his head. Instead, he shoved his hand quickly into his shoulder bag. I shot him. 3 shots.
And what did he have in his shoulder bag?
Just a camera. We think he wanted to delete the photos on it before we grabbed him.
And he died.
There was an investigation. They cleared me.
It might be reopened, Christine said softly. Tatum's eyes widened.
Why?
Apparently there's a new witness. Someone saw the shooting and came forward.
Why did he wait until now?
Christine shrugged.
Why does anyone do anything?
I got a phone call this morning from a special agent in the IIS, a guy named Larson. Do you know him? The IIS was the FBI's internal investigation section. Christine could have done without that damn phone call.
Yeah, I know him.
Tatum clenched his jaw.
I think he dislikes you. I really don't know how you managed to piss so many people off. Perseverance, Tatum suggested. Well, he was positively gleeful when he told me about it.
He wanted to alert me that you were about to be summoned for an interview.
Did he tell you when?
We didn't get that far. I told him that you were investigating a time-sensitive case and that you needed a few days.
I'm not working on any investigation right now.
She sighed.
Of course you are.
Why would I tell Larson about it otherwise? Tatum seemed at a loss.
What do you want me to do exactly?
I want to know more about this internal affairs case, she said.
And I'm working on it. But I need time.
You have to lay low for a few days, at least, until I can sort this out. Tatum nodded, but Christine noticed that now both his fists were clenched. If she had to guess, in less than 24 hours, Tatum would start making calls, trying to handle this mess himself, and that would make this much worse. Chapter 4. The news about the reopening of the internal investigation left Tatum with a bitter taste. He thought he was done with this. Now the whole thing was crawling back from the murky past. He spent an hour or so trying to bury himself in work, finally giving up and trying to find comfort in the office kitchenette. But hoping for anything uplifting in the kitchenette was an exercise in futility. Munching a dry, hostile cookie, he walked back, past Zoe's office, then paused, thinking that he could use a friendly face. He knocked on the door. Behind it, he could hear a disturbing, muffled sound, as if someone was crying.
Come in,
Zoe answered, and he opened the door. She sat behind her desk, transfixed by her laptop. She was much smaller than Tatum, or most women, for that matter. Her eyes were the most prominent fixture of her face, green and mesmerizing. Tatum had once overheard one of the agents call Zoe the vulture behind her back, and he could see why. Her gaze had a predatory look to it, and it almost seemed like she was able to look through people, reading their innermost thoughts, and her nose was long and slightly curved like a beak. The crying sound he'd heard emanated from Zoe's computer. She glanced at him, then hit a key, pausing it. Tatum relaxed his shoulders as the crying stopped.
Sorry, I can come back at another time, he said.
Okay. She turned back to the screen. Tatum raised an eyebrow. She hadn't seen him since Friday. It would have been nice if she at least showed a passing interest in his well-being. He turned to leave, deciding that if he was looking for a friendly face, perhaps Zoe's office wasn't the best place to find one. Tatum, hang on.
Yeah?
I could use another pair of eyes here. Would you mind taking a look?
Sure.
He blinked in surprise. Zoe usually worked alone. He circled her desk and peered at her screen. It showed a video clip paused at 43:32. The entire length of the video was just under an hour. The paused frame was of a young woman lying inside a tight, dark space, her face twisted in fear. The video was in black and white, and Tatum guessed it had been taken using a thermal camera. Zoe restarted the video. The video started with the split screen. The bottom half showed the same woman in black and white lying in the dark space, but now she was screaming. The top half showed sandy terrain, perhaps a desert. There was a rectangular pit in the ground that looked like a grave. The lower part of a man's body moved around the hole as the man appeared to be shoveling sand into it. The woman's screaming was unbearable. Tatum glanced at the office door. He'd left it open. He hurried over to the door and shut it.
"Can you lower the volume, please?"
he said. Zoe nodded, clicking her mouse, and the screaming's volume decreased slightly. Tatum looked back at the screen. The man filling the grave went over to a large bin. He tipped it over with his foot, and soil dropped in clumps from the bin into the large hole. The man scraped the bin with the shovel. The woman thumped with both her hands on whatever was on top of her. The dissonance between the cool, calm movements of the man on top of the screen and the hysteria of the woman on the bottom made Tatum shudder. He leaned over Zoe and paused the video. The screaming stopped and he sagged in relief.
What is this?
It's a video of a woman being buried alive. Or at least, that's what it looks like.
Where did you find it?
Mancuso forwarded it to me. It was sent to the FBI by the San Angelo police in Texas. She asked me to take a look and tell her what I think. Zoe's hand moved to resume the video.
Wait,
Tatum said hurriedly. Her hand hovered for a second over the mouse, then retreated.
What do we know?
Tatum asked, staring at the screen. The caption below the video read, Experiment Number 1. The uploader's username was displayed in gray beside the caption. Schrodinger. A timestamp for the upload read 9/02/16/8/32. Those were the only details on the screen beyond the video itself. The rest of the webpage was blank. Tatum glanced at the URL on the top. It appeared to be a random sequence of letters and digits. Zoe switched to her email account and quickly scanned the email displayed. The buried person in the video was identified by the San Angelo police as Nicole Medina. She's 19 years old, lives with a mother in San Angelo. She was reported missing 3 days ago by her mother. Then, a few hours after she was reported missing, this link was sent to 8 bloggers and 2 journalists from a temporary mailbox. Tatum read the email from behind her shoulder.
They haven't found her yet.
No, they haven't. Zoe pointed at the email, a few lines below where Tatum was reading. Her mother said that she would never have disappeared like that.
Could be a publicity stunt, faking this video. The mother could even be involved.
It could be.
But you don't think so.
I don't know yet.
Let's see the rest.
Zoe resumed the video clip. Nicole's screams filled the room again, and Tatum listened to them, gritting his teeth. He forced himself to look away from the tortured face and focus on the man filling the grave instead. The top half of the video was the important one. Any clue there could help them identify the location where the video had been recorded. The camera was positioned so that the only things visible were the ground, the man's feet and hands, the bins, and the slowly filling grave. He was dressed in jeans and a long-sleeved shirt, his hands covered in thick gloves. No part of his skin was exposed. The sound of the feed originated solely from the video of the woman, who had stopped screaming and begun sobbing in fear. Something in the grave drew his attention.
Look.
He pointed at one of the grave's corners where something snaked upward.
A cable.
You're right. Maybe it's for air? Tatum scrutinized it carefully.
I don't think so, he finally said. It looks like an electrical cable. It could explain how the feed from the buried woman is streamed, if she's really in there.
Why use a cable? Why not just send it via Bluetooth or something?
If she's buried under a lot of earth, it would interfere with reception.
Right. Zoe nodded, intent on the screen. The man worked at emptying the bins for 7 minutes. At one point, he stepped out of the frame, and the top half remained still for a few minutes, while on the bottom, Nicole screamed again. He finished tipping the bins of soil into the grave, then tidied the ground with a shovel. They could hardly see any indication that there was anything there. He then paused and turned to the camera.
What's he doing?
Tatum asked. I think he's just resting. But hang on, look. The man approached the camera, taking something from his pocket. A phone. He flipped it to display the mobile screen. Tatum frowned. It was footage of the president talking behind a podium. The only sound was the soft, exhausted sobs of Nicole Medina.
Is this some sort of political statement?
Zoe shook her head. The video was posted on Friday morning. She pointed at the timestamp of the experiment number one video. The news footage was live and streamed at the same time. He's proving to us that his own video was a live video. Tatum glanced at the date again, his pulse racing. If the police could have located him as he was streaming the video, the entire thing would have been over almost before it had begun. On screen, the man lowered the phone and pocketed it. He then leaned toward the camera, and the top half of the footage went black. Nicole's crying got louder and more hysterical as she thumped on the wood on top of her again. In a minute or two, the video will adjust itself to show her on full screen, Zoe said.
You watched the whole thing?
Yeah. Tatum cleared his throat.
What happens in the end?
The question sounded crass and dumb in the context, and he was disgusted with himself for asking. Zoe moved the cursor to the video progress bar and dragged it to the right. Flashes of the video flickered as she dragged it up to 5707. When she released the button, Nicole was mostly silent, occasionally sniffing. After 10 seconds, the video went dark. The feed just stops, Zoe said. Tatum frowned.
I'd expect him to leave it on. Show us how she suffocates.
Maybe she doesn't suffocate.
Right.
And maybe Nicole isn't really in that grave. Even if Nicole isn't pretending, this could still be a very sick practical joke. She could be locked somewhere else.
Maybe the video of Nicole trapped wasn't live footage, Tatum suggested. The man only showed the live news footage in the top half of the video. There's nothing that necessarily connects it to the bottom half that showed Nicole.
It's possible that there's a reference to Schrodinger's cat. Zoe pointed at the uploader's name, Schrodinger. I don't know the exact details, but Schrodinger's cat is an experiment where you trap a cat in a box.
And you don't know if it's alive or dead? So it's both.
And here, we have a woman trapped in a box, and we're left to wonder if she's alive or dead. Zoe leaned back in her chair. So, what do you think?
What do you mean?
Is this really a woman being buried alive? The video was called Experiment Number One. There could be more.
Let's assume it's real.
Tatum's heart suddenly lurched.
She could still be alive.
Zoe shook her head. Not if she was left there. That's the first thing I checked. I called Lionel and asked him to take a look. Tatum nodded. Lionel was one of the analysts working with the BAU. He managed to approximate the grave size by comparing it to the man's legs and the box's height by comparing it to Nicole's head. At most, if the box is big enough to fill the entire grave, it would be about 90 inches long, 30 inches wide, and 25 inches tall. Probably just slightly larger than a coffin. According to Lionel, even if we factor in a large mistake in his calculations, Nicole would have suffocated within 36 hours at the most. And considering the fact that she was quite hysterical at first, she probably consumed much more air than she needed. Lionel thinks she was probably dead after 12 hours. Tatum sat on the edge of Zoe's desk, atop a few papers.
So, Mancuso wants you to discern if this is some sort of deranged prank or a killer, right?
Could be something else. Maybe someone really took Nicole but didn't kill her. The caption, Experiment Number One, could just mean it's the first of many videos that will feature Nicole. That thought was somehow the worst so far, and Tatum flinched.
So how can you figure that out?
Zoe was about to answer when the door opened, and Mancuso stepped in. Oh, good, she said, glancing at Tatum.
You're here. I was about to ask you to join us. Did you see the video? Parts of it,
Tatum answered. Mancuso nodded,
satisfied, and turned to Zoe.
Any initial thoughts?
I need to talk to the detective in charge to understand the details of the case better. It would help to know more about Nicole Medina, and surely there's a technical data in the video with which we can...
So you think we should investigate this a bit more thoroughly?
Even if this is a prank? Nicole is not likely a willing participant, Zoe said. At the very least, this is a case of kidnapping.
Okay, I want you both to go there, Mancuso said. As early as possible, in case Nicole Medina is still alive. I want to do what we can to help the San Angelo police.
Tatum frowned.
Chief, I doubt this requires us to fly to Texas. I'm sure a few phone interviews would be more than enough.
I'd really prefer to have people there, Mancuso said smoothly.
This feels like a case that has the potential to escalate, and I want to be prepared in case that happens.
But Chief, Zoe's face registered both surprise and worry. My sister?
Your sister is fine, Bentley. Buy flight tickets, or tonight if possible.
Mancuso's voice was hard, not to be argued with.
I want this unit to be involved in the Nicole Medina case.
For a few seconds, Zoe and Mancuso stared at each other. Tatum fought an urge to lean away from their glares. In a moment of clarity, he realized that the chief's decision had additional reasons other than Nicole Medina's safety. Mancuso didn't want Zoe interfering with the Glover investigation anymore. It was common knowledge in the unit that Zoe and the agent who was assigned to the case were constantly arguing about Glover's profile, to the point that the agent complained that Zoe was making his job impossible. And, of course, the chief also wanted Tatum temporarily out of the way and far from the clutches of Larson and the internal investigation. Finally, Zoe glanced away, pursing her lips.
Anything else, Chief?
Contact the San Angelo police to inform them about your arrival. I want constant updates on this case.
Chapter 5. Tatum could hear Marvin, his grandfather, shouting even before he opened the door to the apartment. The old man sounded furious, and Tatum wondered who had peed in his cereal. It was usually Freckle, Tatum's cat. In fact, Tatum wouldn't have been surprised to find out that the cat had literally peed in Marvin's cereal. He peeked inside carefully. Lately, Freckle had decided that his new bed was in front of the door. Opening it too fast resulted in a very angry cat, and in Freckle's case, an angry cat meant bleeding calves for all humans involved. Today, though, the miniature tiger prowled somewhere else, and the entrance was cat-free. The shouts emerged from the kitchen. By their one-sidedness, Tatum concluded that Marvin was talking on the phone, or ranting on the phone, in this case.
Look, miss, just let me talk to your supervisor or anyone else there that has more than 2 brain cells. I want to... Well, of course I want health insurance. That's why I called, right? No, I'm not talking about senior citizen health insurance, damn it. I specifically asked for... Hello? Hello?
Tatum rolled his eyes and walked into the kitchen. Marvin sat by the table, a half-empty cup of tea in front of him. His sharp glare immediately met Tatum's.
Goddamn insurance agents. Blood-sucking leeches. They want your money, but God forbid they actually have to work for it. Think out of the box for once.
I'm glad you're finally handling this.
Tatum fixed himself a cup of tea. He had been nagging Marvin to get his health insurance in order for weeks.
Yeah, well, it doesn't look like it's going anywhere.
Tatum nodded. His grandfather was old school. He wanted to do everything face-to-face and refused to fill out online forms. Any phone conversation that took more than 5 minutes made him cranky. Tatum could sympathize. Things changed too quickly for Marvin these days. He poured the hot water, refilled his grandfather's cup as well, and sat in front of him.
Want me to handle it for you?
He asked.
I know how these people think.
Marvin hesitated.
Yeah,
he finally said grudgingly.
You do that. Sure. What do you need?
I'm trying to get insurance for my skydiving course.
Tatum coughed and spluttered as Marvin stared at him, folding his arms. Tea is most unpleasant when it runs up the nose, especially when it's still hot.
Skydiving course,
Tatum finally said amid sneezing.
I have a skydiving course in 3 days, already paid for and everything. But now it turns out they're not happy with my age.
Their insurance doesn't cover it, so they said I had to get external insurance if I want to participate. Can you believe their nerve? I can, actually.
Tatum wiped his mouth with a kitchen towel.
You can't do a skydiving course. Why the hell not? Because you're 87 years old. So what? All I have to do is fall from a plane. Gravity works the same for old people, Tatum. Who cares about gravity? You'll have a heart attack 5 seconds after you jump from the plane. My heart is as strong as an ox's. Don't be absurd. You already had one heart attack. More than 10 years ago, Tatum. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I don't have a lot of time left. 30 or 40 years, max. I want to jump off a plane before I die. Is that too much to ask? Can't you just play bridge or go fishing like a normal grandfather? Look, you said you'd help me. Are you going to make the call or not? Absolutely not.
Marvin got up angrily and stomped away. Tatum sighed and gazed upward. He wondered if his grandmother was up there in the sky watching them and laughing her ass off. He stood up, taking his tea with him, and followed his grandfather to the living room. Freckle, the orange cat of death, sat there, his tail swishing as he glared at the fishbowl. The one fish inside the glass bowl swam back and forth calmly, circling the beer bottle that served as his sole fish tank decor. The fish's name was Timothy, and the cat and he were engaged in a constant mind battle. Tatum wasn't sure how it had happened, but a few weeks ago, in the middle of the night, he had been woken up by a large crash. Bolting to the living room, gun in hand, he'd found Freckle dazed, completely drenched, and a potted plant upturned. Timothy had been swimming placidly in his fishbowl, which was half empty. Since then, Freckle often prowled around the fishbowl, eyeing it with hate, while the fish did what fish usually do. Marvin sat on the couch, frowning in anger. Tatum knew if he didn't fix it now, his grandfather would find an even more dangerous way to pass the time than skydiving. He was about to fly to Texas, and he didn't want to return to a funeral. He needed to find a way to keep the man busy.
Listen.
He plopped on the couch next to his granddad. His tea swished dangerously in the cup, but miraculously stayed mostly inside.
I'm flying to Texas tonight. I need a favor. Oh, you need a favor now. Well, I'm not in a generous mood, Tatum. You know Zoe Bentley, the woman I work with?
Marvin glanced up at him. His interest clearly piqued.
Yeah. They still didn't catch the guy who attacked her. You know, the serial killer? Rod Glover, I know Tatum, I'm not senile. He's threatening her sister. Maybe stalking her. And Zoe is worried about leaving her sister alone. Do you think you could drop by, check up on her? Why don't the police do anything? Well, Glover has been gone for over a month. But Zoe thinks he might still be around. Just drop by occasionally. It would make her and her sister feel a lot safer. Sure. I have a gun.
Tatum blanched.
Right. No need for that. You can leave your gun at home. And do what, Tatum? Hit the serial killer on his head with my walking stick if he shows up? You don't have a walking stick. Damn right I don't. You know what I do have, Tatum? A gun. You can tell Zoe I'll take care of her sister. Unlike you, I'm glad to help when I'm needed.
Chapter 6 Zoe lay in her bed, watching the burial video again on her laptop. She ignored the bottom half of the feed, where Nicole Medina thumped the lid, screaming for help. After Andrea had entered the room earlier, asking about the disturbing noise, Zoe had muted the sound. She stared at the man with rapt attention, fascinated with the casual movements, unhurried, calm, or so he appeared. Watching closely, she could see that as he filled the grave, his movements accelerated, acquiring a fast, excited pace. That clumsy walk of a man struggling with an uncomfortable erection. He was sexually stimulated, which further convinced her this wasn't a prank. This man was enacting a fantasy. What excited him more? The fact that he filmed it for everyone to see? The screams and thumps from below? The act of covering the grave? Too early to tell. Andrea knocked on the door. Zoe, aren't you hungry? She was starving. Pausing the video, she frowned at the screen for another moment.
The man on top was paused while smoothing the sand above the grave. Below, Nicole's face was captured in the midst of a terrified scream, her mouth wide. She shut the laptop, got off the bed, and opened the door. The smell of deep-fried food made her stomach rumble ravenously. Andrea was just about to knock again. She was pale, her eyes lacking their usual spark, and a wave of sadness washed over Zoe. She hadn't seen her sister like that for a long while. Andrea was a wildflower, a blaze of color, cheerful and full of life. But when faced with perpetual fear, she wilted, her energy drained. "What are we eating?" Zoe asked, fake cheer in her voice. "I made schnitzel and mashed potatoes."
"Schnitzel?
Sounds European." Her sister turned and shuffled to the kitchen.
"I think it's Austrian."
Zoe followed Andrea to the kitchen, where two steaming plates sat on the red and white plaid tablecloth. A large piece of what Zoe assumed was chicken lay on each plate, covered in brown, crispy breadcrumbs. Next to it was a dollop of buttery mashed potatoes topped with a decorative green leaf. A slice of lemon sat on the edge of each plate. It looked and smelled delicious. Andrea pulled two beers from the fridge as Zoe sat down, her mouth salivating. "Put some lemon on it," Andrea said. She did, squeezing it above the schnitzel. She cut a piece and put it in her mouth. The breadcrumb layer spoke of pepper and flour and comfort. The meat, definitely chicken, was thin and well done, and Zoe's teeth sank in it easily. The lemon mingled well with it all, and Zoe breathed through her nose as she chewed slowly. "Good, right?" Andrea smiled, and for a moment Zoe could glimpse the enthusiastic, happy sister she usually was. "It's amazing," Zoe said and swallowed.
"I wouldn't go that far. It's chicken breast and breadcrumbs, hardly worthy of a Michelin star."
"Well, it gets a Zoe star."
"You're just hungry."
Andrea blushed slightly as she cut her own schnitzel. Zoe sipped from her beer.
"What are you doing home? Aren't you supposed to work tonight?"
Andrea shrugged, eyes on her plate.
"I got fired."
"What?"
"Frank called me earlier.
He said he found someone to replace me." Andrea spoke casually, but her voice had the grainy quality that came when words were laced with tears. Frank was the owner of the restaurant Andrea worked in. Zoe digested the news and realized her immediate gut reaction was relief. The night shifts in the restaurant were a constant source of tension between Andrea and her. They placed Andrea at unnecessary risk. Glover could be waiting for Andrea to step out and throw away the trash behind the restaurant. He could follow her when she returned home, grabbing her as she got out of the cab.
"Why did he fire you?" she finally asked.
"Why do you think?" Andrea asked bitterly.
"He said he couldn't pay a waitress who wouldn't do 3 night shifts a week."
"I'm sorry, honey, I..." Andrea dropped her fork and it clattered on the table.
"I can't take this any longer, though. It's been over a month, and no one saw him, not even once. And Agent Caldwell says..."
"Agent Caldwell is wrong. He got him all wrong." Zoe spat angrily. "He doesn't understand how Glover..."
"He said that Glover is too careful, that he'd never risk direct contact."
"He's wrong. Glover's fantasy is..."
"I don't care what his fantasy is, Zoe. What if he's really gone? What if he intends to hide for another year? Or 2, or 5? I won't keep living like this."
The tears she'd managed to hide so far materialized, and one dropped on her schnitzel, absorbed by the breadcrumbs. "Andrea..." Zoe reached for her sister's hand, but Andrea pulled it away.
"Forget it,"
she said. "It was a shitty job anyway." Unsure how to make Andrea feel better, Zoe ate in silence. Andrea wiped her tears with her hand and began eating. After a few minutes, Zoe said,
"Tatum," called earlier, "would you mind if his grandfather dropped by occasionally while we're in Texas?
He's an old man, and Tatum says he gets very lonely." Andrea fixed her with a sharp look. Though unlike Zoe, she hadn't inherited their mother's crooked nose, her sister had gotten their father's intense green eyes. Zoe met her stare, and they sat in silence for a second. She couldn't tell if her sister believed her innocent explanation.
"Sure," Andrea said. "He's a nice man, right?"
"Yeah, and he doesn't know a lot of people here." That was a blatant lie. In the 6 weeks since Tatum and Marvin had moved to Dale City, Marvin had already made the acquaintance of several people, some considerably younger. He had thrown two parties in Tatum's apartment, each one resulting in property damage and police complaints from nearby residents.
It's not like I have anything to do now that I don't have a job or an apartment of my own.
You'll find another job.
I'm tired, Zoe. I don't want to be scared anymore.
Zoe nodded, the delicious mashed potatoes in her mouth suddenly tasteless. Andrea didn't deserve this. Unlike Zoe, she did her best to stay away from violence. Andrea couldn't stand to see anyone hurt, even on TV. And now this twisted person had invaded her life because of her connection to Zoe. When I come back, I'll fix this. Zoe hoped she could keep her word. Mancuso promised me access to the case. I'll find that bastard Glover and put him behind bars. And if you don't, we'll find a solution.
Chapter 7, San Angelo, Texas, Tuesday, September 6th, 2016. The blast of hot, dry air that struck Zoe as they left the airport momentarily took her breath away. The air-conditioned atmosphere inside the terminal had been very misleading. Every molecule of water in her skin dissipated, leaving behind a dry, crinkling parchment. She shattered her eyes with her free hand as she peered around her, the bright sun blinding her. She quickly took off her black jacket, folding it and placing it in the crook of her arm. She'd left her sunglasses back home. She packed late at night, when the concept of sunlight had been far away. She'd have to buy a new pair, or she'd spend the entire time in San Angelo squinting at everything.
Our car should be over there,
Tatum gestured. He looked like the perfect FBI agent cliche. Dark suit, large black sunglasses, shiny shoes. If the heat bothered him in any way, it didn't show.
A silver Hyundai Accent. They said it's parked on the northern side of the parking lot.
Zoe glanced at the parking lot. It was dozens of yards away. She wasn't sure she'd make it that far.
Do you have water?
She asked, her voice croaking. She hazily remembered seeing him buy a bottle inside the terminal. Tatum nodded, rummaged in his bag and located the water bottle. He held it to her, a bead of condensation slowly trickling down the plastic container. Zoe took it, unscrewed the cap, and tipped the bottle to her mouth, throwing her head back.
Feel free to...
Tatum stared as Zoe gulped the entire thing.
Finish it.
Thanks.
She licked her lips, relieved. As they paced between the cars, the sun boiled at Zoe's brain, turning it into soup. All thoughts of serial killers were gone, replaced by a confused shopping list of things she'd need to survive the heat. A hat, a large bottle of water, short, thin clothes, a portable icebox to live inside.
There.
Tatum unlocked the car. Zoe hurriedly stepped inside. The heat in the car was stifling, far from the relief she'd hoped for. Tatum switched on the engine, and the car's air conditioning blasted them with hot air that quickly cooled into icy goodness. Zoe aimed the vents directly at her face, feeling her brain slowly kicking into gear again. She'd have to stay in air-conditioned rooms constantly if she was expected to think. As Tatum checked how to get to the San Angelo police station on his phone, Zoe turned on the radio and flipped the stations until she heard Taylor Swift singing, "Begin Again." Pleased, she leaned back, waiting for Tatum to drive.
Yeah, we're not going to listen to that, right?
Tatum raised his eyes from the phone. Yes, we are.
I can't really do that, Zoe.
Sure you can. Come on, drive.
Tell you what.
Tatum brightened up.
We'll take turns, okay? I'll choose the songs for this ride, then you'll do the next one.
Fine. Tatum plugged his phone into the auxiliary input and fiddled with it a bit.
Okay. We're listening to Genesis.
I like Genesis,
Zoe said, feeling satisfaction that Tatum's attempt at patronizing her musical taste was foiled.
I had the cassette of Invisible Touch when I was younger.
I'm sure you did. But I'm talking about Genesis before Peter Gabriel left and everything went to hell. This is selling England by the pound, and it's a masterpiece.
He hit play and began to drive, the hum of the car engine intermingling with a lone singer's mournful tone. Zoe gazed out the window, the music washing over her. The land on her side was a flat, endless field, dotted with an occasional tree. The other side of the road was hidden from sight by a wild growth of similar trees and cacti.
Her mind turned to Andrea. What was her sister doing right now? Still sleeping, probably. She had said she'd start looking for a new job today. Zoe did her best to ignore the pang of worry that instantly awoke when she thought of Andrea driving around Dale City by herself. Zoe had left her the car keys, so Andrea wouldn't need to take cabs or public transportation. That, Zoe hoped, would keep her sister safer and difficult to follow.
You don't seem to mind the heat, she said, glancing at Tatum trying to distract herself.
I grew up in Arizona.
Zoe nodded.
Did you like growing up in...
She hesitated, suddenly unsure where exactly he'd grown up in.
Wickenburg? Yeah, I guess I did. It was a really small town, so everyone knew everyone. I had the same three friends from kindergarten all the way up to high school. And the pace was different than it is in the city. We'd hang around outside for hours playing ball or just chatting until my parents or Marvin would shout at us to go do something useful.
You lived close to Marvin? Zoe asked.
Tatum smiled.
He moved next door to us after my grandma died. My dad and Marvin used to shout at each other through the window. The houses were still a bit apart, so they had to shout really loud. Drove the neighbors insane.
Tatum deepened his voice in imitation.
Hey, Marvin, coming to watch the game? Sure, Tali, what's for dinner? Marvin, we already ate dinner an hour ago. What? And you didn't call?
Tatum snorted.
They'd keep shouting until my mom would bang the window shut.
Tali? Zoe asked.
Tolliver. But everyone called my dad Tali. Check this out. This part of the song's brilliant.
Zoe didn't share his excitement with this part of the song. The style kept changing, making it annoying to follow. My parents hardly ever shouted. They always worried about what the neighbors think, she said. When they'd have an argument, my mom would walk around the house, making sure all the windows were closed, while screaming at my dad.
Ha! My parents sometimes shouted at each other because there was nothing good on TV. It was like a family pastime.
Tatum drummed on the steering wheel, the smile still on his face as he listened to the album.
What did you do as a child?
Tatum asked after a few minutes.
Before you started chasing serial killers, I mean.
Read, mostly. Anything I could get my hands on. We had a nice library in Maynard, and I'd go there on my bike a few times every week to borrow books.
I had you pegged for a bookworm.
I wasn't like a recluse, hiding in the attic with my books, Zoe said, annoyed. I'd hang out with my friends. Well, one friend.
Your BFF?
I don't know what that is.
Tatum glanced at her, surprised.
Best friends forever? Everyone knows that.
Zoe shrugged.
Well, obviously, not forever. I haven't talked to her in more than 5 years, but we were very good friends. We would go to each other's house all the time on our bike. Now that I think about it, I went everywhere with my bike. I don't think I've ridden a bike since I left Maynard.
I used to ride my bike everywhere, too, Tatum said. Whenever I think about my childhood, I remember pedaling hard, trying to get the bike as fast as I could. I'd ride to school and back every day, timing myself, always trying to break my own records. I'd ride with my friends a lot, too, racing down the street, ramming into each other. Sometimes we'd go to Turtleback Mountain. I don't even think it's a proper mountain, but it seemed huge. We'd ride to the top, then drive as fast as we could to the bottom.
Sounds like it's a miracle you survived childhood.
Tatum laughed.
Once I moved in with Marvin, supervision became a bit lax.
The image of teenage Tatum took shape in Zoe's mind. She found herself fascinated with it. She wanted to find out how little Tatum had grown up into the man she was slowly getting to know.
What happened to your parents? She asked. They'd never talked about it before. She just knew that Marvin had raised him.
They died in a car accident when I was 12. Drunk driver rammed into them.
I'm sorry.
Thanks. The driver who killed them died as well, which I think was lucky. Because otherwise, Marvin would have hunted him down and killed him. Instead, he took me in and did a pretty decent job of raising me.
I'd say he did more than a decent job.
Well, you weren't around for the famous 11th grade curfew time war.
Tatum flashed her a grin. He slowed the car down as they entered the parking lot of the San Angelo Police Department, a large, flat, round structure.
So,
he switched off the engine.
What do you think of the album?
There's no chorus, no rhythm, and the singer's voice is a bit annoying when he yells. But I like the instrumental section in the first song. If the entire album was like that, it would have been great to listen to. Tatum's mouth twitched.
You have to listen to it several times to really...
Tatum, I'm never listening to that album again, and it's my turn to choose next time. She got out of the car and closed the door behind her. Chapter 8. The Criminal Investigation Division of the San Angelo Police Department was on the first floor, on the far end of the long hallway that emerged from the lobby. The open space was split into an assortment of cubicles, their walls beige, just low enough that Tatum could peek over the top into each of the small enclosed spaces. Lieutenant Peter Jensen, who escorted them inside, paused for a moment and looked around him, as if noticing the cubicles for the first time.
This is where our detectives work,
he gestured grandly around his kingdom. He was a short man, not much taller than Zoe.
Over here we have the investigation whiteboard,
he continued, showing them a large whiteboard.
We fill it out with our most pressing cases.
The whiteboard was empty except for one corner, where someone had played tic-tac-toe, and the top, where it seemed someone accidentally had begun writing with a permanent marker and then realized his mistake and stopped. The letters G-I-B were the result, etched for eternity. Jensen glared at the whiteboard in frustration, clearly upset there was no pressing case to demonstrate.
That's very interesting, Tatum hoped to interrupt the tour. Where do you want to talk about the Medina case? Let's go to my office. It's just over there.
He led them through a small door at the edge of the cubicles to a cramped corner office with a large desk, its surface entirely clean. On the wall opposite the door were several framed letters that thanked the police for their hard work, and one photograph of Jensen with an official-looking man Tatum assumed was the police chief. Jensen sat behind his desk and entwined his fingers.
Please, sit down.
Over his years as an FBI agent, Tatum had learned to sense when he was not welcome. Jensen clearly wasn't happy they were there. He had a certain air of a man preparing a long speech that could be summarized as, go away.
I am really happy the FBI is taking this case so seriously,
Jensen said.
Quite frankly, we informed you about the video because we wanted to update you that we had a situation that could, under certain circumstances, escalate.
Tatum translated Jensen's sentence in his mind. Someone called the FBI without asking me first.
That's why we're here, he said brightly, to prevent escalation. Of course, and we're very pleased. Intra-agency collaboration is something we value very highly in the San Angelo Police Department.
We handle our shit ourselves. All other law agencies should mind their own damn business.
However, it might have been premature to send an FBI team over.
You want to take our case away? That will happen over my cold, dead body. Premature? Zoe interrupted. A young woman seems to have been buried alive. Do you really have the expertise to handle such a case on your own?
Well, obviously we're looking into all aspects. The video is quite disturbing, but we suspect it doesn't necessarily represent the whole facts.
The video is a fake, just like you two.
What kind of facts? What are you talking about? Zoe asked in a tense voice.
Tatum struggled with the dilemma, unsure if he should intervene. On one hand, if Zoe exploded, they might be kicked off the case and out of the station. On the other hand, it would be amusing. Decisions, decisions.
Nicole Medina's father, Oscar Medina, is incarcerated on possession with intent to sell. He has clear connections to the Mexican mafia. We have an informant claiming a local gang is trying to exert leverage on a large supply chain, and it's very possible the video is a threat aimed at Oscar Medina.
You think a local gang buried Nicole alive while filming it to threaten her father? Zoe's eyes narrowed. And then what? They dug her back up?
We need to examine all possibilities, and we really want to hear the FBI's take on it, of course.
Tatum's